Hello, my name is Debbie Boone, and I want to welcome you to my podcast, The Bend, where we explore how successful people navigated the path and emerged in a better place when life threw them an unexpected twist. It's inspired by one of my favorite sayings, "The bend in the road is not the end of the road unless you fail to make the curve." These conversations will hopefully help you and inspire you to embrace your personal bend and to flourish. I hope you enjoy it, and if you need help with your own personal navigation and you're in veterinary medicine, please feel free to reach out to me at Debbie Boone, 2Manage Vets Consulting. Enjoy the bend and be inspired by our wonderful guest. Welcome. Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's session of The Bend. So today I am so excited to bring you Dr. Dani Roblin, who is a veterinarian, a communication coach, and a mentor. She's the founder of ReadyVetGo, which is a six-month remote veterinary mentorship program supporting new grads, and it complements the clinical mentorship that practices provide to their new associates. She graduated from UC Davis in 2004. She completed an internship at Michigan Veterinary Specialist, and she feels extremely privileged to be able to help veterinarians thrive in this profession that she loves so much. And she's an awesome person, and she is my friend, and I am glad that she's here with me today because we did struggle a little bit with scheduling. We had a lot of stuff going on that kept happening, and we finally got our schedules together. So, Dani, thanks for coming on, and thanks for your patience through all these, three schedule changes, I think.
I will wait for Debbie Boone as long as it takes. So I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, you're welcome. So I always like to hear the origin story. So tell me how you got started in vet med.
I got started in vet med. I really wanted to be a veterinarian, you know, since I was young. My origin story is a little bit different in that what drew me to veterinary medicine was the relationship that our family had with our family veterinarian. So yes, I loved animals. Yes, I loved, you know, science and all of that, but I loved our vet, Dr. Connolly. He felt like he was a part of our family. I loved his communication style. I loved the way he included me as a young child in discussions around the health and care of our pets. And I remember he called one night to talk to our family about something, and we were sitting down at dinner. So we all spoke to him on the phone. And when he hung up, I announced to my family, I'm going to be just like him. And I think what I meant was I'm going to be somebody who is able to connect with people and families through their pets. And I don't know that I realized it quite then when I was young, but when I look back now on the things that have given me joy in 20 years of this profession, it is connecting with people, helping people by helping their pets. So that is what prompted everything and led me down the very narrow path of veterinary school, veterinary medicine, and led to where I am now.
Awesome. Well, what a great role model. I feel like if all veterinarians had that role model, and this is how it's supposed to be, many of them would be much happier in their profession, and we would still have a lot of them in our profession. Yes. Because of the challenges that they have with communication. And of course, you know me, this is my banner that I wave all the time, is about communication. Yes. So how did you, as you were, you know, kind of moving through life, and I'm sure you didn't kind of think, oh, I'm going to start a mentorship business. Tell me how was that curveball? How did that happen?
Yeah, it was a curveball. It is not something that I expected when I planned on being a veterinarian. I was very happy in the clinic for now 19 years. I'm still happy in the clinic. I love it. But I've always been kind of an unofficial mentor for anybody that came through the clinic and needed support, you know, be that, you know, an extern or an RVT student or a new veterinarian. And the practice that I was working in 2020 hired a new veterinarian. She was a new graduate. And she started with us right during the pandemic in the summer of 2020. And we had a really wonderful working relationship. And she began coming to me with questions that I knew were not about her own cases, because I pretty much knew what her cases were. And it turns out she was asking questions on behalf of classmates and friends who are now out in practice and not receiving the same type of support that she was. And I said, you know, everyone's used to being on Zoom now. It was, you know, July of 2020. I said, let's just form a Zoom group. And so we formed this impromptu Zoom group with myself facilitating discussions with new veterinarians all over the country. And it was incredible. It was really transformative for them, but also for me. And I had a real light bulb moment in that what I realized was that a lot of the support that new grads need can actually be done remotely. You know, sure, they need somebody to be a second set of eyes on some radiographs or to help unblock a CAD or whatever technical things they're struggling with. But the things that take a lot of time, you know, to dive deep into complicated interactions with colleagues, clients, navigating the challenges around quality of life discussions and things like that, those take time. They don't need to be done urgently and they can be done remotely. And so I just had this sort of aha moment, and I spent the next many months building out a curriculum and daydreaming about a business, and then I launched it, and turns out there's a big need for it. And here we are today with ReadyVetGo. So it all started in that pandemic summer of 2020 with that impromptu Zoom group.
You know, that's funny. Was that a little nerve wracking? I mean, it's scary to start a business. And I know I started mine in the middle of the Great Recession. Mm. So you started yours in the middle of a pandemic. Kind of, how did you talk yourself over the fear?
Oh gosh, it took a lot. One thing that I did was I had somebody else help me talk through the fear. So I hired a business coach right away, and she really kind of helped me tap into my own kind of inner feelings around the whole thing. And recognizing a need helped. Love for my profession and seeing a problem with, you know, this staggering statistic of 30% or more of new veterinarians leaving their first job within the first year. I honestly felt compelled. I felt like this idea existed and it just was moving through me like an unstoppable train. It was going to happen whether I was afraid or not. And I just powered through it. And honestly, it was a really good experience to work through that fear and to navigate all of the challenges of starting something new while building out a program to help support people who are starting something new. I know how it feels right now. I'm not just remembering back 20 years ago. I'm actually doing something new and scary also. And so I think it's actually been good for my business and for what I'm doing as a mentor to go through that experience. So yes, it's scary. Yes, there's lots of challenges. I'm bringing on people to help support me through that and just kind of leaning into it and knowing that it's really to better this profession that I love so much and that has given so much to me.
The statistic that you said, like 30% of the new grads were considering leaving their first job. And it's an unfortunate statistic. And I've been doing this a really long time, that's a common thing, that they will leave that first job. And the first one seems like it's the bright and shiny object. And maybe they've made some bad choices, but they also didn't get the support that they needed in that. And the practice owners, I don't want to say they had any malintention of saying, no, we're just going to throw you to the fire. Although I have seen that, like you walk in the door and they walk out. And I said, first of all, I would never leave my patients with somebody who just walked out of school. I feel that's malpractice. That just going kind of behind them and doing some record check. And like you said, looking over their shoulder, looking at some rads, that's mentorship, but that's not really what mentorship is. So let's talk a little bit about what makes ReadyVetGo different than this kind of mentoring that happens on the fly in practice. And even if you have somebody who enjoys teaching in practice, that doesn't mean they always have the time or the focus to look after these new graduates because they have their own caseload. So what makes your program different from that?
Yeah, I mean, we really help complement what's already happening on the ground. So, you know, you said previously that when practice owners say that they provide mentorship but don't always come through, there's no malintent. And I love that statement. I think people genuinely mean it when they say in their job ads, new grads welcome, mentorship provided. But then just the nature of practice being so busy and, you know, some people not wanting to have those deep connections or conversations about quality of life or client communication, things kind of slip through the cracks. So what this program provides is extra scaffolding to help support what already is taking place on the ground. So it's a 6-month formal program. It's cohort based. So one of the really amazing features about the program is the community that the new veterinarians are able to form with their peers. So we have, it's divided up into multiple different parts. so that we can capture people where their needs are. So we have a full cohort of new veterinarians, which is anywhere from 12 to up to 40 at a time. And then they are also broken down into PAC groups, which are small peer groups of 3 to 4 new veterinarians with a very experienced mentor. And they get to meet twice a month, usually in the evening, after work, when they have time to dive deep into some of the challenges that they're having. And this is where a lot of the magic really happens, is in these PAC meetings. And so this is a really unique program because of the community aspect. It's also unique in the way we bring on our mentors. Our mentors are extremely experienced. They have to have at least 10 or more years of clinical practice. And it's also really important that they've held a leadership position in their practice, either having been a practice owner or a medical director or something that really will help them understand both the clinical side of veterinary medicine, but also the business side. You know, we understand that veterinary medicine is a business. The practices who enroll their new associates in our program are making a financial investment in them. And we want to help make sure that they are able to honestly get a return on that investment and also not lose their new veterinarian within that first year. So we have a lot of really unique features that help us kind of stand out from some of the other mentorship programs. And those are some of the ones that I'm really proud of.
Do you have any statistics about how many cohorts have you had come through since you started, and how many of those stayed in the practices that invested in ReadyVetGo?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we have had 3 cohorts, and the vast majority of people who have gone through have stayed. So I think we're at around 90%, which is really wonderful. The ones that have left, there were some mistakes made along the way. You know, this has been a learning curve for me as well. I had a practice who enrolled some new veterinarians where there was no experienced veterinarian in the clinic at all. They had left. And so they were looking to have us be all of the support, and that's just not enough. And so those veterinarians did not thrive. It was also an emergency practice. So they were really set up for some big challenges. So, but everybody else has stayed so far. We have been going for over a year now. So the statistics really are coming in, and we keep collecting numbers. Our surveys show that confidence is significantly increased for people who come through our program. Their time spent in the exam room is decreased. Their efficiency is improved. So we're getting really good feedback. And I know that, you know, as the years go by and we collect even more data, that we're going to be making a big dent in those numbers.
I love that you mentioned confidence, because one of the things I've noticed, I've been interviewing new graduate veterinarians for 30 plus years. And in my practices, we always hired new grads because we didn't want to hire bad habits. And yes, we did teach them. And we were very invested in teaching them the way that they kind of needed to practice. And we were AHA accredited hospitals. So I always laugh and say I'm definitely a medicine snob because I grew up in practice.
Yeah.
But I think there's a confidence problem. I feel like the new grads who got out, you know, let's say even 10 or 15 years ago, even when you got out, there was a more confidence. But then because of COVID, because of a couple of years of remote learning, I feel like the newer veterinarians really feel like they missed a lot. And they love having you guys to lean on. And that is such a good investment, because confidence, in fact, we had a private conversation one time, and you said they start out asking me about medicine, but then you find out that really you're not asking about medicine. They kind of got that. What they're asking about is the communication about medicine. And I feel like that is the biggest challenge that we face in veterinary medicine, is gaining communication skills. So tell me some like common things that you're seeing. Is there a pattern? Is there a common thread of communication issues that you're seeing with these new grads that you're mentoring?
Yes, the confidence piece is definitely a theme. And I find that when new veterinarians are trying to express to clients that they do know something really well, they tend to talk a lot. You know, we want to share everything that we know just so that they know we really know our stuff. And that it snowballs, because then they're in the exam room for a long time, then they get behind on their next case, and then we have a time management problem. So that's a really common theme. You know, I feel like the new veterinarians tell me I overtalk a lot. Yeah. One thing I hear a lot at the beginning of our cohorts is people have a hard time saying, I don't know the answer to that question. That's a hard thing for people to say. And so we role play that a lot. And, you know, I tell them how often I say that now and how much trust that, you know, builds in a client when you're able to say, I don't know, but I know where to look. I know who to ask. I have an experienced colleague right outside. I'm going to step out of the exam room. And it takes a certain level of confidence to be able to say that. So much of what we do in our program is act like cheerleaders. We're real confidence builders, you know, and I say this constantly, you know this stuff. Wow, do you hear how you just answered that question? You know the medicine, and we're going to help you come up with some language to sound more confident until you really start to feel more confident.
Now, it's such a good point that you made about they talk too much, because I've often taught veterinarians in communication classes and in my practice, it's like, people don't want to be veterinarians, and don't right. try to teach them to be veterinarians. Just teach them enough to where they understand the concept. And there was an older veterinarian I overheard one day explaining a blocked cat to a client. And he looked at her and said, have you ever had a clogged toilet in your house? And she said, yes. He said, same principle. And I went, that's so brilliant.
That's so good.
It is exactly the principle behind a blocked cat. And it didn't take any technical knowledge. And she instantly got the visual of it.
I love that.
And then he moved forward. So I feel like sometimes we just need to be better storytellers, but we yes. need to tell stories without using jargon. We assume that people know stuff that we know. They don't live in our world. They don't That's even right. live remotely in our world, to, even for the simple things, because I have asked a multitude of my students, how many of you have had a pet owner come into your practice who doesn't know if their dog is male or female? 100% of them raise their hands.
Right.
That's the most basic anatomy you could get. If you can't tell male or female, there's a problem. So we have to keep that concept in mind, I think, when we're educating people, is that we got to take it down a lot further than we thought, or we either figure out who that person is and what their knowledge base is in talking to them. I know Sue Ettinger asked one time, what would you say to somebody who you had to tell, you know, their pet had cancer? And I said, well, Sue, first of all, I'm a cancer survivor. So I would say to that person, have you ever had a family member or you have ever had cancer? Because that's going to, they have learned through their own personal experience a lot about being in a cancer situation. And then you can move from there. But if they've never had that experience, then you've got to start at a different place. So I
That's exactly right. I love that so much. And it taps into something that I impress upon the mentees all the time, which is get curious. You know, there's a difference between being really nosy and being curious about somebody's life experience. And I think it is completely fair game. You know, what you just said, it sort of gives me chills. If we can connect with somebody about their own experience of being a cancer survivor or having helped a loved one through that experience, well, now we know where we can begin the conversation. And we can't know that if we don't ask. And right. taking the time to ask and to be curious, I think really can help open the door for some really deep connection and excellent communication. And I love that you just gave that example, and that's, you know, how you have taught your students.
Yeah, it's a trust builder, because yes. when we're making connections with people through even little small things, they feel cared for and paid attention to.
Yes.
Not just run through this grist mill of, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. I'm just curious, is, you know, what do you consider in all this? And I feel like you've been a successful doctor and you're a great communicator. Well, what do you consider to be the biggest mistake that you made?
Oh, gosh, that's a really big question.
You can say career. You can limit it to career.
Biggest mistake in my career? That is a very good question. I made the mistake, I don't know if this would be the biggest mistake, but just thinking of things that, you know, immediately come to mind. I came out of school and into practice expecting a certain level of monitoring equipment, you know, just level of equipment. And when I first came out and I really was into ultrasound, and I asked for a new fancy ultrasound machine without really having an understanding of all of the things that are involved in the purchase, storage, use of that ultrasound machine. And so I think some of my mistakes that came about in the first few years was really not understanding the finances and sort of the business side of our profession, that was never something that I was interested in. The VBMA was brand new when I was a student. I stood as far away from those meetings as possible. I, you know, was not interested. It had the word business in it. That was not for me. Business classes were electives. I did not take them. And I feel like that was a bit of a detriment, at least in the beginning. So some of my mistakes were around that. And then as I, you know, got more comfortable with the medicine, I really developed an interest in the business side of things. And so the business piece is an important part of our mentorship program because I think it really helps. What's interesting to me is how many of our mentees are really interested in that part. I didn't think that they would, but they really are. I think the schools are doing a better job of introducing that. I would say that most of my mistakes came around that, the finances and the business part.
As the manager of a multi-doctor hospital, I understand completely the fact that there's a shiny new toy.
Yes.
And went, I went to class. I want to buy this. And you're like, that's $30,000. And where are you going to put it? And how often will you use it? And are you really comfortable? Because the ultrasound, we bought an ultrasound and a cutting laser almost at the same time in my five-doctor practice. They use a cutting laser every day. And because they weren't comfortable with the ultrasound, we were still bringing in the specialist and this just became a coat rack. And we're like, okay, somebody's
that is so common.
It really is. You've got to have the interest in it and you've got to have more than one person who is interested in it too. Because it's got to pay for itself.
Yep.
And it will.
Yes.
You have people who are comfortable. It goes back to the confidence, right? They have to have confidence being able to use it and read it. But I love that. I love the fact that now you have a business and you avoided business in school. You're like, oh, I wish I had taken that accounting.
Oh yeah. It's been a steep learning curve. It's been actually really fun at this stage in my career. And honestly, at this stage in my life to be taking online business classes and learning this whole new thing. And I just love it so much.
Business follows very specific rules. And you can be creative with it. But as far as the math goes, the math is the math. And you've got to have more coming in than going out. And that's a pretty good rule. But how to make that happen is always an interesting challenge. Mm-hmm. So tell me about the value of networking and how that helped you achieve this goal with ReadyVetGo.
Oh, I cannot talk enough about the value of networking. It's how I met you. It's how I have met so many people who have helped me with this next phase of my career. One of my first orders of business when I decided to launch my own company, ReadyVetGo, was to join Vet Partners. And that is where I met you and have met so many people who have really helped me navigate some of the challenges of this new phase of my career. And I don't know that as a practicing veterinarian who, you know, was just coming to work and trying to get through my day, that I really appreciated the value of networking. I have to tell you, I mean, even just, I went to the AVMA convention last month to get my own CE, and I really made networking, I put more emphasis on it, not so much for ReadyVetGo, but just for my own personal connection with people. And it has really, it made it such a more joyful experience. You know, sometimes those conferences, there's thousands of people and it can sometimes feel very lonely. And that's a strange experience, you know, to just go and learn about the newest treatment for liver disease or something and just not make the networking a priority. It's really changed the quality of my conference experience, which has been great. And so I would encourage any veterinarians in practice to really expand their network. Networking is something that, you know, when we start our program, we do a mentee skills training, and we really help our mentees identify people in their network who will be excellent mentors. You know, I think we sometimes feel like our mentor is going to be the practice owner, the practice manager, the people who are in our immediate surroundings. And I really encourage them to think outside of the box and look at people in their network who could potentially be mentors, and to ask them, to invite them, hey, can I call on you sometimes? You know, would you be willing to help me? And that's something that it takes practice to ask that. And it sometimes takes a little bit of bravery. And I've had to really force myself to do that. And I have received it, you know, in tenfold, all of the benefits that come back with all of the networking that I've done. It's really, it's helped me grow my business, but more than that, it's really helped me grow personally.
I love networking. I feel like sometimes it has a bad connotation that it's kind of like going to one of those BNI meetings and everybody's forcing you to buy something from them. Look, it's kind of a salesy, but
yeah,
really good networking has to do with investigating about people and finding out about them and then trying to figure out if you have something that you can do to help them. Because we live better lives when we help other people. And it improves our mental well-being. I will always remember, and I've said this many times on this podcast, going to VMX and listening to Michael J. Fox give a keynote. And he stumbled up the stairs and he was all bloody. As I can remember seeing his knuckles holding onto the podium as he was trying to stop his, you know, nervous twitching from the Parkinson's. And he said, I don't feel sorry for myself. If you feel sorry for yourself, go out and do something for somebody else and then you won't feel sorry for yourself anymore. And I feel like that is so true that we sit around wringing our hands and we're doing this as a profession, like, oh, this profession is bad. We're wringing our hands and we can do nothing about it and it's toxic and it's da 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 da. It's not. It do something, right? Do something about it. We are not victims. We absolutely can be victorious if we are proactive. And what you're doing is proactively doing something to make this better, to offer that helping hand. I try to do it myself. I try to put stuff out in the world that makes life better for people. And building a good network helps you do that because you then know people who can say, oh, I don't know exactly how to do this, but, and the thing you said, I know people, right? I know people. And I tell that to my people when they hire me as a consultant. I'm like, look, I focus a lot on communication and culture building, leadership, but when it comes to accounting, I kept books for 19 years, but there are people who are much better at it than I am. And so I will connect you with the people and the IT people. I'm not going to tell you that. And the marketing specialists, I have people who do that. And I have people like Danny who do Ready, Vet, Go, who will help you with that new grad that we're working on hiring. So I feel like those are the kind of things that a good network gives you, this safety net that if you don't know it, there's this one that can help or this one that can help, but you've got to have that faith in them, right? It's got to be a good referral because nobody wants to refer to somebody who is not good at their job. You know, we want to refer to people who are on top of things. So that's the value of networking for me is I know people and I know them well enough to have confidence in them that they will truly perform. And if they didn't, I would be very disappointed in them. But I haven't had that happen to me so far.
That's exactly right. And I love the way you summarize that with the importance of networking. When I think about the people who are helping me, they are all people who have come from my network. I'm not just Googling, you know, social media support. I am using somebody from my network who came from a wonderful referral to help me with that. Same thing with accounting. Same thing with, you know, navigating the challenges of my business. And it's what was so amazing to me when I first stepped out and started looking for help was how many people who wanted to help just because they wanted to help. They had received help when they were in my position, and now they're eager to give guidance and be a mentor for me. And that has just been the most really amazing experience. And I love to be able to do that for others. And it has been really rewarding for me to reach out and ask for that kind of help from other people in my network.
I always love that little meme that you're the person in the middle who's reaching up and there's somebody that's pulling you up, but then you can reach back down here and you can pull this one up too.
Yeah.
And so we all just, you know, one of these days we'll be gone, but these people are going to be here and we're going to want to pull them into our, you know, so that they can do even more than we did to help them grow. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've got to keep people in this profession. We, you know, you were at Vet Partners and we both were listening to kind of the debate over where we have a shortage of veterinarians, veterinary technicians. Do we really? And I'm not really sure that we do have a shortage when you do just a numbers count, but I feel like we have a huge retention problem.
Yes.
And if the bodies are out there, the talent is out there, but they're leaving the profession because of the poor leadership and poor mentorship. And I think people in an older generation, like the boomers, they just kind of sucked it up and suffered through it until they kind of got over the hump. But a younger generation is going, no, we do not want to live lives like this. And we've got to step up our game. I did some work with Veterinary Visionaries, and they just had this new video that launched actually yesterday. I think Garth sent it to me. And it's listening to the challenges of what's happening in the profession, the fact that there is, you know, kind of low pay. And you and I both know that if we are better communicators, if we are have greater confidence, if we work with our clients better, the money becomes available to pay the people appropriate salaries. And it's a kind of a snowball effect of if we get this foundation right of communication, of raising our new doctors to do great communication and work with our clients as their advisors and not their dictators, you need to do this kind of stuff.
Yes.
Then the money kind of comes in. And I've lived that. I know for sure it works that way.
Yes, I agree. I mean, we always say, you know, good medicine equals good business, but you can't practice good medicine if you cannot communicate the value of that good medicine that you're providing. So it is just so important. And I love hearing this message that you're out spreading, you know, that it's an optimistic, positive perspective. Yes, we have some problems, and there are some skills and tools that we can teach people to help fix some of those problems. You know, you're out there talking about fixing the problems coming from a place of really like connection and joy. And that's what we do too. So I think that's why I've always liked you, Debbie.
that's why we're connected instantly. We're like, yes, this girl is preaching my song.
Yeah.
She is
on
the same page. Because I, you know, doom and gloom is not going to get you anywhere. It never has. And life is hard. You know, I'm a cancer survivor. I've lost job. My father committed suicide when I was young. So there's always hurdles in life to get over. And you just keep moving through those things. And everyone is, if you look at it, okay, I learned something from this that will make it better the next time some kind of challenge comes up. I always think about what Eleanor Green said when we were talking about the young veterinarians. And she said, the most important skill that we can look for in new veterinarians is adaptability.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is such a challenge that everything is changing. Everything is flexible. Everything, you think you've seen it all, and something new will come in and you're like, oh my God, how did that even happen? So how do you fix it? You know, you've got to be able to problem solve. You've got to be able to adapt to whatever's in front of you at that point in time.
Yes, adaptability is key. And I don't know that we always do the best at identifying that in people. You know, that's something that, you know, some of the skills and traits that get people into veterinary school are not always the things that serve them best when they're out in practice. And so, you know, potentially, you know, coming up with ways to identify that adaptability piece is key. And I love that you said that Eleanor Green said that. I sometimes feel like we need to put together one of those books or like daily calendars of quotes from Eleanor Green, because she has so many just amazing pearls of wisdom.
Yes, she does. There's nothing I love better than sitting down and talking to Eleanor and just talking about this stuff and the students and how we can help them, because I feel like we're kind of missing so much. And I realize that in veterinary school, there is so much, and it's, over the 35 years, it has gotten so complicated, because when I first started, I even tell CSRs, I said, look, when I first started, life was simple. We had no monthly flea preventative. So all we talked about was fleas. We gave Adam's flea spray. We put flea collars on things. We told people to put the tail end of the flea collar in the vacuum bag to kill the fleas they sucked up out of the house. It's prednisone like candy, because that's all we had. So, but life was pretty simple. Things got hit by a car, you neutered cats, you talked about fleas. But then it got very, very complicated, to the point where now we are, you know, doing MRIs and CTs and complicated surgeries, and anything that you can do for human medicine, we can do in vet. So it became a very complex world. And I feel like, you know, I kind of grew up as it was growing up and was learning it a bit at a time, but to walk in the door and have to be trained on it now, I think, wow, how overwhelming it would be. I can't even keep all the drugs straight, because they all start with C or S.
Yes. I know. Having to learn all of those now. Yeah, I love that you pointed that out. I mean, the body of knowledge that they have to know is so vast. And I think that's where some of the fear comes in too, because there is so much that can be done, but there's not enough time to learn all of those things in school. And there's also this feeling that because there are specialists who can do so much of this, that I shouldn't touch this. You know, this is a specialist really should do this. And this is something that I'm still figuring out how to navigate. I personally feel like one of the things that has given me so much joy throughout my career is that I can do a lot. You know, if there's a specialist available, I will offer it, but I also can jump in and amputate something if needed or perform some sophisticated procedure. And that had a lot to do with the mentoring that I received when I first came out. I was in a little bit more of a rural area. I had a self-described cowboy medicine practice owner who said, you know, it's either you're going to do it or nobody is. So Right. Get in there and do it. Yeah. And that's a little bit of a different mentality than we have now. And I don't know that that's the correct one or appropriate for today, but I do understand why there is so much fear. And I feel like as mentors and practice managers and owners that we can do some things to change that a little bit and help empower the new veterinarians to take on some of these more complicated procedures. I think it adds to some of the fulfillment and some of the joy. You know, we want to be able to help.
I mean, I could think of the most, I remember seeing a veterinarian sitting at a card table in a feed store giving vaccines. And I thought, you went to school for 8 years to do that? That's got to be like the most boring thing in the world. And why would you do that? Right? Why would you? But I feel like you're right. I feel like growing up in vet med and having doctors that performed orthopedics that were not specialists, and they were good. I mean, they were very good at that. But that would laugh because they would refresh themselves by either going and looking at this old 8-track VHS tape that Waltham used to put out, or they'd open Bojarab over here and they're like, cut and do and cut and do.
But
you know, a surgeon's a surgeon, and the principles are, many of them are the same. And you're right, the fact that the clients, if they went to a specialist, it would cost them two times more. And not to say that that's not worth it, but the alternative is nothing or euthanasia.
Exactly.
So you give the client the option and say, you know what, I've done this twice and they do it every day, but we'll try it if you don't, you know, if you can't, don't go over there. And it goes back to the spectrum of care. And I'm sure that you talk to your mentees about that, because there is, I feel like people want, and I think personally, we want the same thing too. We want practical medicine. We want to not go through bells and whistles. And I think about this I had a dog who was cushionoid, and it was quite apparent to me that this dog had the pattern baldness and many of the symptoms. And so we ran the test, and sure enough, he's cushionoid. But then the specialist wants to do it again. I went, why? It is obvious that this dog has Cushing's disease. It is obvious he's not responding to the drugs that we're giving him. And he's 15 and staring at the wall and vocalizing all day long. So guess what? It's time to make this decision. Why would I run another test? And so we have to be a practical guide, I feel like, for our clients, because if they want everything, fine. We've got everything to throw at it. But if they're going like, is this really going to improve the quality of my cat's life?
That's right.
You know, no, it's just for my own academic benefit that I want to know this. Why would I do it? And why would I charge you for it?
Yeah, it's such an important and relevant topic today, you know, when you talk about something like spectrum of care. And I love the example that you just used, because I feel like when we talk about spectrum of care, we are often talking about it in the context of finances. You know, we need to have a spectrum of care because some people can't afford the gold standard. Well, I would argue that it goes way beyond that. More often, I feel like if people don't choose the gold standard, it doesn't have to do with finances, although that is important. It has to do more about, you know, the role of that pet in the family structure, the quality of life for the pet, the quality of life for the humans attached to that pet. And so I love having the conversation about spectrum of care that moves beyond just finances, like that example that you just used. Well, why would we do that? Is that going to change the outcome? And that's a conversation that, you know, I help our mentees have all the time and that I have every day. You know, here is an option. Let's talk about what we're going to do with that information. Is it going to change what we do? if yes, let's definitely do it. And sometimes people will say, you know what, it's not going to change, but I really need it for my own peace of mind.
Exactly.
I just personally took my own dog to the neurologist, and the neurologist said, we can do an MRI, but I think this is what we're going to end up doing anyway. You don't have to do it. And I said, I have to do it. I have to know. And he said, fine, go ahead. And so I did. It didn't change a thing. It changed my mind, and it was worth the money to me. But that's a conversation that, you know, that specialist was able to have with me. And he treated me like a pet owner, not, you know, and a colleague, of course, but coming at it from a pet owner's perspective, and knew that I needed that information for my own peace of mind, which is also perfectly valid.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Well, obviously you were in the business of giving advice. So I'm going to ask you, what advice would you give someone who's facing a big life or career decision?
That is a really good question. I would advise people to, it sounds very cliche, but it's something that I've really been trying to embrace, and it's working for me. So listening to your gut, it's a very good guide. It's something that I did not listen to for a large portion of my life, and it did not serve me well. And listening to my gut has helped me a lot. I would encourage people to be curious, both with themselves and with people around them. So asking questions and leaning on people for support, but ultimately tapping into their own inner wisdom. You know, I think we have a lot of our own inner wisdom, and if we listen to that, I think it can serve us well. I've been very moved by the book Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert. It's a book that was recommended to me when I first was contemplating the idea of starting a business, and that has been really helpful. So I would encourage people to pick up that book. It's my most recommended book. So and go for it. Change can be scary, but it's really fun. So you know, if that's something that people are considering, I would say take the time and really think about it and listen to yourself.
I love that. You know, be brave and embrace change. I'm actually getting ready to write an article called Change is a Superpower. Superpower, because it really is. It is our brain likes to keep us safe, and a habit is safe, but if we never grow, if we don't take a chance on moving forward and putting that one foot in front of the other and saying, you know what, let me go try it. What's the worst that could happen? The worst.
Exactly. Exactly. I will just add a little caveat about that, though, and this is relevant completely to the group of people that I'm working with, which is that sometimes people are looking for change for maybe the reasons that aren't the best. So when we talk about the statistic of new veterinarians leaving their first job within the first year, I think we have a mentality that the grass is greener somewhere else. And often, you know this better than anyone after your many years of practice management, a lot of the problems are similar from one place to the next. And so, you know, I really encourage people to really think about what the motivation is for change. You know, one of the superpowers of our program is having veterinarians from many different practice groups in cohorts together. And rather than have them, you know, think, oh, I'm just going to go over there, it seems so much better, they can all talk to each other and realize that the problems are very similar. And so that really ends up making it so that new veterinarians are less likely to leave and go for that change that they thought they needed, when in fact, they just needed to have a little shift in perspective or approach something differently. So moving towards change can be wonderful, but also sitting back and making sure that the reasons and the motivation for change are the best.
Exactly. And sometimes the problem is you. Right. That's the other thing, because it's funny. I used to interview people and I would say, why did you leave your last position? Oh, and then they start to complain about everybody. And what about the one before that? Oh, they start to complain about everybody. I went,
yes.
The thread is similar here.
That's right.
Everybody is horrible except you. So it's like, let me think a little bit.
Exactly.
So that's fun. So Danny, any fun facts about you? Do you have a secret talent, a favorite song, something people might be surprised to know about you?
I love Egypt. I spent a year abroad in college studying in Egypt. I went back again last year. I took my son and we went all over Egypt. So my love for Egypt is something that is not something that people know. I took Arabic in college. I studied Egyptology. So that was sort of a side hobby that I have, I would say is a unique and interesting thing about me.
That is the most interesting fact I've heard anybody say. And I mean, I've had people who've been music majors who went to vet school, but I've never had anybody who was like an Egyptologist who went to vet school.
Yeah. I was so obsessed with Egypt that when I did my undergrad at Cornell, and I had gone to Egypt after high school. And when I started at Cornell, I wanted to study abroad. And so I specifically found a school in Egypt where I could take organic chemistry so that I would not get behind on my prereqs for vet school. So I took organic chemistry at the American University in Cairo, which was extremely challenging, although they did speak in English because it was an American funded school. But I was dead set on meeting my requirements to get to vet school, but also needed to have this Egypt experience at the same time.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Well, any final words of wisdom? You mentioned your favorite book. Anything else you would like to say about your company, or like when the next cohort starts, or how people can get in touch with you? We'll put all this in show notes, of course. But any shout out to a favorite person, any of those?
Yes, I would say... yeah, well, shout out to Vet Partners who connected me with you, Debbie. Vet Partners has been an amazing experience, and for the networking and all of the wisdom that I've received from everybody in it. As far as next steps for working with us, we have enrollments for our cohorts quarterly. So we just launched a cohort in July. We have one upcoming in October, and our next one after that will be January. You can learn more about us on our website. It's readyvetgo.co. We are very active on social media, so you can follow us on Instagram at ReadyVetGo. We work with corporate practices to have enrollment for multiple new grads at the same time, as well as independent practices. We are here really to support practices who need to provide that extra scaffolding for their new associates, regardless of the type of practice. Mixed practice, we've got equine coming on board for our next cohort, so we would love to meet anybody and chat with them and tell them more about our program.
That's awesome that you have equine coming on. I think that's one of our big challenges, the vet shortages are equine. So we got to keep those horse vets in the world out there.
Yep.
Awesome. Well, Dani, thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to spend some time with you. And I look forward to seeing you at BMX in January. I'm going to be at AHA Con. They keep changing the names of all these things. So AHA Con. Will be my next speaking engagement, but always great to talk to you. And thank you very much for your time today and for what you're doing for VetMed to change and make a bend in the road for the better.
Yes, we are doing our best and it's working. And thank you so much for having me on. And it was so fun. I was excited to have just a whole long conversation with you just by myself. So this was great. Thank you.
We can spend a lot of time talking about this, but we better stop for now.
Thank you.
Like I said, all Dani's information will be in the show notes, and I highly recommend ReadyVetGo to help your new graduates stay in your practice longer. Thanks, Dani.
Thank you.